Welcome, welcome, truth seekers. I think I can say that. That's not a copyrighted phrase, is it? You've tuned into the Mike Malloy Show, as you are wont to do at this hour of the day. Mr. Malloy is in transit. He's probably landed very recently back in Atlanta, but has the evening off because this was a travel day for him. It was, he was out here for our big one-year anniversary party. So my name's Jeff Farias. I'll be filling in for Mike tonight right here on the Nova M Radio Network. The phone line, as always, 1-800-989-1480. Lots of stuff in store today. I have a guest coming up at the bottom of this hour. Christopher D. Cook is an author and an award-winning journalist. His most recent book is called Diet for a Dead Planet, Big Business and the Coming Food Crisis. Book is a couple of years old at this point, but we're going to talk all about the 2007 Farm Bill, lots of food safety issues. It just seems like this kind of stuff is popping up more and more in the mainstream news. So we're going to spend some time talking about that. Boy, I'll tell you, if at all possible, I would like to stay away from the Virginia Tech story, gun control, those kind of issues. My feeling on gun control is it ain't going to happen, kids. That genie is out of the bottle. We are not going to be able to confiscate every gun in this country, and even if we could, they'd get more. I understand, you know, the Second Amendment does not guarantee an individual the right to own a gun. I have been listening to Randy as well. Understand that whole issue. One thing that's really bothered me about this since it started has been the politicizing of this tragedy from both sides of the aisle. I was disappointed to see one of my favorite websites out there, and I won't name them by name, but one of my favorite liberal websites out there, the first thing they had posted up was a picture of Dick Cheney at an NRA meeting, and they're all admiring a rifle. On the other side, you have Dana Perino, and the first thing out of her mouth about this tragedy was, oh, of course the president supports the right to bear arms, basically doing the NRA's work on this issue. And then, of course, today, Mr. Bush went to the Virginia Tech campus in Blacksburg, Virginia, to make a five-minute speech and apparently three different press conferences or press moments, videotape little photo ops of him showing concern at the event. And, of course, no tragedy in America would be complete without the presence of Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church. Yes, it's reported over at America Blog today that Fred Phelps and his people will be protesting the funerals. Fred Phelps, yes, Westboro Baptist Church. You've probably seen his website. I believe it's called something like GodHatesFags.com. That Fred Phelps. Yes, somehow God made this happen. Because he agrees with Fred Phelps about his hatred of gays. So anyway, yeah, it's just a circus. And again, you turn on the television, three-ring circus. This is the American mainstream media at its lowest point, the way they cover a tragedy. They cover an impending tragedy. CNN somehow believes we need to see that same piece of footage over and over again, taken on someone's cell phone of gunshots in the background and people running and panicking. We need to see this thousands of times so it's ingrained in our mind. So with so much going on out there in the world, I would prefer we talk about some other things. Like, for instance, Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich plans, although he's going to take a little time out of respect for the Virginia Tech tragedy, to introduce articles of impeachment toward Dick Cheney. That's right, folks. Dennis Kucinich wants to initiate articles of impeachment in the House of Representatives on Dick Cheney. Made that announcement today. Love to talk about that. Love to talk about the fact that Condoleezza Rice is about to be subpoenaed by Henry Waxman. That's right. Apparently she is refusing to give information that they need. So she's about to be subpoenaed. A House committee is considering, they're going to meet tomorrow morning, considering giving immunity to Monica Goodling. to get her testimony, to force, basically force her to testify. She can't plead the fifth. She can no longer plead the fifth if she's been granted full immunity for anything she may say, because she can no longer incriminate herself. So they can essentially force her to appear and to testify. We talk about Paul Wolfowitz. How about that deal, huh? Getting his partner, sexual partner, his girlfriend, a high-paying job at the State Department, actually making more money than the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice. We can talk about that. We can talk about recent comments. Al-Qaeda spokespeople are essentially saying that George Bush has turned Iraq into a terror university. It's the best training ground Al-Qaeda could ever hope for. Now, we hear Bush on the air constantly talking about how, you know, we have to fight them there so they don't follow us home, and we have to, you know, stop the seeds of terrorism. And if we leave Iraq, it'll turn into a failed state and a breeding ground for terrorism. Well, our presence there is creating a failed state in Iraq and creating a breeding ground for terrorism. What better training? On-the-job training. Live American soldiers as targets. I don't think Al-Qaeda could ask for a better training scenario. In Afghanistan, all they had was, you know, a bunch of ropes and sticks to jump over. In Iraq, real live Americans to shoot at. We could talk about that. We could also talk about the fact that there were more university killings today. But that was in Mosul, Iraq. A gunman killed the dean of the Political Science College and a professor at Mosul University's College of Arts on Monday. Professor Jafar Hassan was gunned down first at 9 a.m. as he was going to work. Talal Yunus al-Jalili, the college dean, was shot dead outside the university at about 2:30 p.m. Again, watching the media react to this story is just mind-boggling to me. In fact, I mean, to the extent that Shelley Drobny, our one of our owners and founders of Air America and Nova M, was in town. They were in town for the party, and we're talking this morning. He put an article out there today. I believe you can find it on Huffington, about basically taking some time off from the mainstream media, using this as an excuse to just disengage from your television set and the cable news. Just don't watch it. It's just going to be non-stop the horror of Virginia Tech. They're going to interview every single person they can find who had any connection anywhere, on and on and on and on. It's just going to go on and on and on and on. The tragedy of this thing in West Virginia. 33 people killed. 33 people brutally killed is a slow day in Iraq, in Baghdad. So you watch our media overreact to this. And again, a horrible, horrible tragedy. Do you have any sense of what that tragedy magnified on a daily basis in Iraq? It's a whole different level of terror and fear there, because most of us are pretty secure. We know that we can go about our daily business, and the likelihood of some such harm befalling us is pretty slim. For the people of Baghdad, this is an everyday reality. Every time you leave your home, you do not know if you will come back. Yeah, if it's Americans being shot, round-the-clock coverage. We will see the same footage over and over. Micro-analyze every minute detail. The circus comes to town, starting with Dana Perino, George Bush, starting with and ending up with Fred Phelps. I mean, that's the spectrum of it. We'll be right back after these messages with the Mike Malloy Show on Nova M. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show on Nova M. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. Check us out on the stream at NovaM.com. NovaMradio.com. Hey, at the bottom of the hour, Christopher Cook's going to be with us. He's the author of Diet for a Dead Planet, Big Business and the Coming Food Crisis. Have him for about half an hour or so. The rest of the show is just going to be all caller-driven, so I want to hear what's on your mind. Let's take a few phone calls right now. Roman in Mesa, Arizona. Roman, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff.
How you doing, buddy?
Oh, not too bad. I called you earlier, but I didn't realize someone else was on your prior program. So.
Our friend Cynthia was there today.
Yep. Yeah. Listen, I wanted to talk about that particular issue that happened, but from a totally different standpoint.
What do you got?
That is this. Virginia Tech. We've talked about how sorry we feel about everything already. But, one of the things that we don't seem to realize that we as a society are enabling these kinds of situations because we do not respect life.
Right.
We live in a society of death and destruction. We have all of these people, these public officials who approve capital executions, and that includes our own governor. We have a president who thinks that killing human beings is not a big deal. We don't respect life. We give it lip service, but our actions show otherwise. And then when somebody can justify killing people, we're surprised.
Mm-hmm.
If we can justify and rationalizing the taking of human life, we're setting a bad example for other people.
Right. And the whole debate about gun, Second Amendment arguments, both sides coming right up from the moment this thing happened.
Absolutely.
Canada has more guns per capita than we do.
Yep.
But they don't butcher one another.
That's right. And look what happens in Europe. They respect life, and so fewer lives are lost. And
right.
If we start respecting life, and I mean really respecting life, don't wage wars, don't execute people, don't economically destroy people, then pretty soon other people would say, well, wait a second, maybe I really shouldn't kill this individual. And if we can do it with smoking, if we can make smokers feel like lepers, we can make killers feel like lepers, and there will be less of it here in this country. But we have to have the will to do it.
Yep.
And it
point,
starts
Roman.
At the leadership.
Yep. Thanks for that, Roman. Thank
Thanks
you.
For taking my call, Jeff.
Take care, buddy. Okay. Mike in Scottsdale.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'm sure that you can do a whole three-hour show based on gun control, Second Amendment rights, and all that, but let's not do that tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about impeachment.
Yeah, Dennis Kucinich.
Well, you bring up Dick Cheney, and I'm not really aware of the specifics of that, but also a caller to your show in the last hour called up and talked about Scott Ritter, and it brought to mind something that Scott Ritter said in answer to a question. Someone said, so how can we impeach George Bush?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I'll tell you, it's very simple. Look at the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8, Powers of the Legislative Branch. First of all, that specifies that we can go to war, we can call it the militia, to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. Where was that with Iraq?
Right, right.
And then he points to Article 6, Debt, Supremacy, and Oaths, which basically specifies that any treaty that the Senate ratifies becomes the law of the land. And the Senate ratified the treaty with the UN to join the UN, and UN has Article 51. And Article 51 says that anything short of an attack upon the member nation must be resolved through the Security Council. And we didn't do that. In fact, we thwarted the Security Council. So this president...
And lying to Congress in the State of the Union address is impeachable. Way back, nobody even talks about this anymore. Before we even got into Iraq, during the war in Afghanistan, the Bush administration illegally took $700 million out of the funding for the Afghanistan war
right.
to build air bases in Kuwait to launch the Iraq attack. Even though this is still 2002, before the president supposedly decided he was going to go to war in Iraq. That right there is an impeachable offense, a misappropriation of funds, $700 million worth.
Absolutely. I can only fathom that the Congress hasn't acted on this. Well, for one thing, the 110th Congress has only been in there for 100 days.
Right.
But I can only fathom that they must feel that there's some complicitness because they gave him the war authorization, the war powers. But that's not pulling the trigger of the gun. That might be handing Bush the gun.
Right.
But he's the one that pointed it and shot it.
Right. Absolutely.
So let's impeach the guy.
I'm all for it.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
I got time to sneak another one in. No, I don't have any time for another call. We're going to go to a break here. When I get back, Christopher Cook, author of Diet for a Dead Planet. We'll be talking with him for probably about half an hour. In the last 2 hours of the program, all caller-driven, folks. We'll just take your call to find out what's going on. I'll be right back. Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. Joined by a very special guest, Christopher Cook, award-winning journalist, an author, has a book out called Diet for a Dead Planet, Big Business and the Coming Food Crisis. Christopher, welcome to the program. Are you there?
Yes.
Christopher, welcome. Hello. Welcome. How are you doing tonight?
Great. Nice to be with you.
Good. Let's just start off a little bit identifying the problem. I mean, but beyond the big news stories we hear about the bird flu and the E. coli and the peanut butter and the tainted spinach and lettuce, roughly how many Americans get sick from food?
I can give you the big picture, which is what I really talk about in the book, beyond the headlines, which is that we are finding 75, 76 million Americans getting sick from the food that they eat each year, and between 5,000 and 9,000 of them are dying.
Wow.
From foodborne illnesses, tainted meat, tainted vegetables that have been tainted by some kind of manure runoff from a large farm that brings E. coli bacteria into the farming supply. And, on a deeper level, what we're also finding is, of course, obesity rates that are soaring, in the order of 30% of Americans now considered obese, soaring obesity amongst kids, where the rates have gone from about 4% in the 1970s to close to 18% today. We're seeing, estimates range from 150 to 300,000 Americans dying each year from chronic diseases, such as diabetes and heart disease, which stem largely from our diets. And all of this is connected to our food policy and what we call the Farm Bill, which is renewed every 5 years and is now being negotiated and discussed in Congress, which really defines what we grow in this country and what we eat in this country and who grows it and how it gets to us and in what form. So our tax dollars end up really influencing what kind of a food supply we have to choose from, and then that influences our health.
Mm-hmm. What accounts for just all this, all of these illnesses, all these problems with the food supply? Is it just the corporatization of the farming industry, of the supermarket industry, or some combination thereof?
Well, we've always had tainted food problems, for instance, since before the times of concentrated agriculture, but what's clear is that, and I really examined this in detail for the book, and it comes out that we're seeing this incredible centralization, economic centralization of our food supply, so that, for instance, four corporations control 85% of the beef in America today.
Wow.
Now, in most major food groups and commodities, whether you're talking about
the controlling the corn processing or controlling pork or chicken. Most of the rates are about four companies controlling 40% to 60% of that category of food. In supermarkets where we buy our food, five companies are controlling, about 45, maybe a little over 45% of all the grocery sales in America. This is led by Walmart, which by itself takes up about a quarter of all grocery sales. So it's phenomenal control, and it's not, I'm not really pointing the finger at a company and just saying, oh, it's bad to be big. What happens is that these companies have a whole set of requirements, to return to maximize the return to shareholders, maximize profits. What they do is they maximize volume of production and efficiency and speed of production, which all could sound very good, but what that turns out to mean for the rest of us is controlling the farming system and controlling who's farming what, and controlling the price that farmers will get for their crop, and therefore it's driving a whole system that's forcing farmers to get bigger and bigger and driving many farmers out of the system because they can't compete and they can't survive in our current system. So,
is it also sort of increasing the uses of different pesticides just for greater efficiency, greater, greater return on the profit? You just dump more chemicals into the ground for a bigger yield?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's maintaining. We've seen fairly flat rates in the past sort of 5 to 10 years of pesticide use.
Mm-hmm.
And, the myth might be that we've gotten rid of pesticides or that they've gone down, but actually in many cases they've gone up or remained constant. And this is because the companies, again, are demanding this rapid supply, and farmers, the quickest, easiest way that they can possibly do this is by spraying chemicals on the land. It's not the only way,
mm-hmm.
and in the end it's not the best way at all, and it's not sustainable. And to give you a couple examples, we're using more than 500,000 tons of pesticides, 500,000 tons of highly toxic chemicals that are sprayed on our food system and put into the soil. And this is creating, water pollution across the country. We're seeing, study after study showing that, anywhere from 80 to 90% of streams that are sampled in study after study have pesticide residue in them. Well water has residue. It's estimated that of all the cancers each year in America, pesticides are a strong contributor to 5,000 or 6,000 of those.
Mm-hmm.
This is an EPA estimate. And so, you can't do a one for one and say this pesticide killed me. What you can say is that it's contributing significantly to our overall toxic load in our bodies, and many of them are known to be carcinogenic and toxic to our nervous system and reproductive systems. That's their purpose.
Right.
And it's the same system that's run, that's really controlled by these handful of large corporations, not in a sort of sinister, conspiratorial way, but just in a purely economical way that, is ending up depleting topsoil around the country and polluting waterways and driving farmers out of business to the tune of, we're now losing a farmer every half an hour.
Wow.
In this country, largely as a result of this increasing consolidation of agriculture, which again is contributed to by our tax dollars.
Well, one of the other issues, I guess, in terms of the consolidation and corporatization of livestock is that more and more animals are compacted into smaller and smaller spaces. And this is also creating a huge problem with dealing with the waste. And we keep hearing about another way that our rivers and lakes are being polluted is by runoff from animal waste. What kind of numbers are we seeing on that?
Oh, it's remarkable. I mean, the research I did for the book just astounded me. I mean, it's on the order of 1.3 billion tons of waste coming out of these facilities, animal waste.
Wow.
And this is not, good old-fashioned manure or bad old-fashioned manure, whatever your opinion is about that. This is at very incredible concentrations that do become toxic because you get too much phosphorus in the soil, too much nitrogen in the soil,
mm-hmm.
and it's polluting waterways. To give you a few examples, we have, I've looked at the numbers and we're losing tens of millions of fish, from the runoff that goes into rivers and streams. And and kills literally tens of millions of fish from this highly concentrated pollutant that goes in there. And then, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico, we now have a dead zone, as they call it, a hypoxia problem. It sounds like some kind of, you know, zit problem, but it's a dead zone of algae blooms that's caused by this glut of not only manure runoff, but pesticide runoff and other chemicals coming from our major riverways that flow into the Gulf of Mexico. So we're, you know, and you know, fleshing out this picture, I mean, I've studied these farms, and there's phenomenal air pollution that comes out of these facilities as well, because you're talking about a factory that will house, you know, say 80,000 hogs or more. In some cases, you'll have a row of barns along the horizon accumulating to, you know, over 100,000 hogs and massive cattle feedlots. And the air pollution that's been measured by the government and by other studies is phenomenal. And, you know, they've had to shut a couple of these operations down. And, you know, study after study is finding that folks who live near these facilities are getting sick, and not just a common cold, but actually chronic bronchitis, other respiratory problems and skin problems, and very frequent nausea and things like this on levels that are far exceeding the normal population.
Wow, unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. Also, another statistic I found really fascinating in your book is that the average food item in the United States travels 2,000 miles from farm to your table.
That's right.
That's just astounding to me.
Yeah, and this is intimately connected with this whole sort of, quote, addiction to oil that our president likes to speak about, and our dependency on foreign oil. I like to talk about our dependency on domestic oil as well. I don't think either are very healthy for us. But, yeah, we're seeing, you know, food travel thousands of miles nationally and internationally, you know, again, largely to supply, you know, these large corporations and the supermarket chains that demand, you know, and some of it's connected to consumer patterns in which we're now habituated to eat out of season. We're eating more and more processed foods, which include multiple ingredients that are shipped in from multiple locations, you know, around the country and the globe to be processed in these giant facilities by these corporations. And so, and you know, what we really need to do is reconnect with local foods and fresh foods and produce, and get back to sort of a 100-mile zone or something, or 200-mile zone as much as possible. It's incredibly polluting, the kind of system that we have today.
Hey, Christopher, we got to take a quick break. When we get back, I'd like to, in our next segment, focus on some of the recommendations and solutions and some of the things that you come up in terms of a healthy way forward.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Christopher Cook, author of Diet for a Dead Planet, Big Business and the Coming Food Crisis, right here on the Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio Network. We'll be right back after these messages. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, filling in for Mike tonight. I'm here with Christopher Cook, author of Diet for a Dead Planet, Big Business, and the Coming Food Crisis. Christopher, welcome back.
Yes, hi.
I'd like to talk a little bit about some of your recommendations. There's a farm bill right now being discussed. What are some of your recommendations? What do you see as the way forward to help us over some of this?
Yeah, I mean, to give you a quick picture, you know, what really needs to be changed is our subsidy system. And this is something that's become a bit of a bogeyman from both the right and the left. And, you know, we're spending roughly $20 to $25 billion a year in tax dollars on farm subsidies right now. And most of this is going to large-scale agriculture. It's going to, you know, like 70% just about going to the top 10%. Of farmers, and 20% of the money going to just the top 1% of farmers who are getting hundreds of thousands of dollars, again, to farm basically commodity crops that are used as raw ingredients for the corporate, by the corporate food processors. What's important here is that the corporations that run the processing and the trading and the marketing of these foods are the ones who end up really benefiting, because these subsidies cut the price, they enable the price to stay low, for these raw ingredients. And so what I would like to see is a subsidy system that really actually supports farmers instead of supporting these large firms that process food and ship it around, as well as benefiting, by the way, many corporations and individuals who have nothing to do with farming whatsoever. It's kind of scandalous. But beyond the scandals, I mean, really what needs to be changed is you know, shifting this money toward a set of priorities that I think everybody can agree would be good for us. In other words, organic production, shifting monies toward transitions toward organic foods production, which is better for the land as well as better for our health, creating incentives for local food production and regional food production and marketing, so that we cut down on that 2,000 mile shipment of food.
And people are either eating fresher, locally grown food as opposed to stuff that's been highly processed and preserved to make the long journey. So,
exactly. Right. And, you know, not every community can farm everything it needs. It's not about being isolationist and exclusive. It's about saying, what are the resources, the land resources and farm resources in this area, and how can we use our tax dollars to create programs that incentivize, as they like to say, this locally oriented, regionally oriented production of fresh organic foods, and shifting the money in that direction. You know, there are a lot of programs right now that I highlight and discuss in the book that have solutions to the crises that I'm talking about, and I profile a bunch of these groups in the book as well. So there are some really positive signs. The problem is that they don't get enough money. Right. And so what we can do is educate ourselves and start to, you know, lobby and pressure people and say, you know, instead of the $25 billion going to big agriculture that is destructive of land and farming communities and our health, let's transition toward community food security programs that are already on the map, that are getting fresh foods into local schools and that are setting up farmers markets in poor areas, both rural and urban, and that are increasing access to fresh foods for poor folks. And, you know, all sorts of wonderful programs that are on the ground, but they're getting, about $4 million a year from the federal government compared to the $25
billion. Wow. Hey, Christopher, I'd like to take a call if you want. I have a fellow named Matt here from Mesa who's a former farmer. I had a question for you. Matt? Great. Hey, Matt, you there?
Yes, I am.
You're on the air.
I agree with a lot of what he's saying as far as the subsidies need to be directed more towards the smaller farmer. I was one myself at one time. My main comment that I wanted to make, though, was in regards to the chemicals and what could be done to curb that. And that would simply be reflected on the consumers and the stores that sell the produce. Mainly just in the fact that a lot of the chemicals that we had to use because consumers, you know, demanded prettier fruit. One chemical that actually is outlawed now is Alar, which was used to lengthen Red Delicious apples, so they were more appealing to the consumer. We didn't want to have to use that. I don't have any problem with a more round Red Delicious apple as opposed to a taller one, but consumers do. And then another chemical was promaline, which was used to ripen apples more. Another one that we didn't want to have to use, promaline was about $300 for about 6 ounces of it.
Wow.
And 6 ounces would basically be what you'd put in one or two tanks, 300-gallon tanks of spray spray to spray the crops with.
Hey, Matt, I'm coming up on a break. I'm sorry. I got to let you go.
All right.
Thanks for your comments. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Christopher, if anybody wants to learn more about what you're doing, is there a place, a website, or a place they can go to find out?
Absolutely. My website is dietforadeadplanet.com, mm-hmm. all one word, lowercase, and they can check out my book, which is now in paperback, Diet for a Dead Planet.
Great.
And I appreciate your time on the show, and I just hope people will pay attention because this really affects basically our farmlands and food.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Christopher.
Thank you. Appreciate your
time on this.
Thank you.
It's the Molloy Show. I'll be right back with your phone calls, 1-800-989-1480. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Molloy Show. I'm Jeff Farrier, sitting in for Mike. Today was a travel day for him, heading back to Atlanta from his weekend here in Phoenix, joining us. Had a great time meeting Mr. Molloy in person. I hope you all get a chance someday. You'll not forget it. Hey, this just in. Well, I guess you probably heard about this yesterday. 9 months before the attacks on September 11th, French intelligence suspected the terror network was plotting a hijacking, possibly involving a U.S. airline, and warned the CIA, according to former French intelligence officials. And, of course, we have this.
I don't think anybody could have predicted that these people would take an airplane and slam it into the World Trade Center.
Nobody could have predicted that, except maybe the French told the CIA. And how do we react? Well, we put Dick Cheney in charge of shutting down NORAD that day. Let's take some phone calls. Cameron in Montreal, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Jeff. I was just commenting on your opening statement about the situation, the relativity that you're bringing to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think that upsets me the most is when I hear members of the administration say things like, well, the media doesn't report on the good things that are happening,
right,
like school openings.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a counterpoint, I mean, you're right. All the media has just gone crazy over this. It's like the war doesn't even exist.
Right.
And
yep.
the family members, I mean, who have lost soldiers, Bush hasn't even shown up at their funerals, and this merited, you know, a helicopter ride and a security trip down to Virginia. I'm just astonished, and I'm hoping that most Americans will view the relativity and maybe speak out against it, because it's disproportionate. It's just astonishing.
It really is. And I also find, you know, the whole notion of they're not reporting the good news. You know, they don't report on the thousands of airplanes that successfully take off and land every day. But when an accident happens and one crashes, that is news. Painting a school isn't news. You know what I mean? So that whole,
right,
whole
and,
argument
and
of not reporting the good news is just a completely false argument.
Right. I mean, it is whatever they want the news to be,
right,
is what they want to say.
Right, right.
Well, you know, it's if they don't want you to know about people dying, they won't let you see the coffins returning, because
mm-hmm.
they don't want you to think about how that will impact you.
Right.
And one of the comments that you had made about, you had mentioned that there are maybe more guns in Canada per capita.
Mm-hmm.
That may be true, but we don't have handguns and we don't have assault rifles.
Wow,
except
really?
For what we're seeing is guns coming across the border. And Ontario and Toronto, a lot of the handgun problems that they've had have predominantly been guns that have originated out of the United States. But you're right. I mean, in terms of guns, I mean, you know, in Quebec we have, you know, shotguns and everything. But the crimes that you hear that are committed in Canada, especially Eastern Canada, happen to be with knives or with cars, people beating up. It's not with handguns. We don't have. And the laws are pretty strict in terms, in relation to that. I mean, you can't come across the border with a handgun without a permit from Canada, from the provincial authorities, and which, you know, the border crossing that you have. But, you know, it is one of the, it's increasing. Handgun violence is increasing, and it's one of the things that is an irritant, with legislators because, a lot of the trafficking and origination of the guns is coming out of the U.S.
Well, I mean, as a Canadian, and obviously somebody who is, what do you account for the difference in our cultures? Why are Americans so obsessed with this violence and with the kill? I mean, Michael Moore touched on the question in Bowling for Columbine, you know, when he compared it, he went across from Detroit to Windsor, very, very different cultures.
Yeah.
As a Canadian, what's your perspective? I mean, what do you see as the difference culturally?
Well, I mean, I just think that, you know, we tend to be still more communal. I think in the United States, individualism, is something that is cherished or insisted upon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when, you know, you stratify yourself in believing that once you make it to a certain level, then you'll never have to turn back and remember from where you came or help those, you know, who may have assisted you. You end up in this kind of like individualist kind of way, and you think that you can do everything yourself. And wow. I think that also lends to, you know, things that happen. I mean, if this gentleman in Virginia was just mentally ill and he had no health care, I mean, that says more to me than anything else.
Right. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, interesting perspective. Thanks a lot, Cameron. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks.
Enjoying the show.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
You too. Hey, let's go over to Moses in Miami, Florida. Moses, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Your show is completely amazing. I would like to thank you for bringing up this food issue that we have here, and especially bring up your last guest, because I've been meaning to call the show, because I know Mike likes to talk about the incompetence of corporatism and government, and to me, this is, our food issue is a very big incompetence, what's happening in our nation and in this country.
Well, I think it's something that's systematic because we see it happening in so many different levels of government in the last, I don't know, 7 years or so. Something goes wrong as things are wont to do. There's always going to be unpredictables. There's always going to be problems. There's always going to be things that come up. And usually, there are qualified people working in the government with some level of expertise to step up and try and, take responsibility and make some improvements. But here, every time something pops up, every time something goes wrong, well, all of a sudden we find some crony whose only qualification for the job is loyalty to George Bush.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we have this problem where the last time I've heard about people getting sick or dying from food was way back in the 1920s.
Right.
You know, when before Theodore Roosevelt put in those regulations about the meat industry. Well, Well, you understand.
Yeah, I know.
So
yeah.
It's been way far back when. Since and reading through history, that's the last time I ever heard of people getting actually sick through our meat byproducts and everything. I mean, we haven't had I've never heard of just strains of different types of foods that are affecting many people all the time like this. The media is not reporting this. Like, they're only reporting the case, but they're not doing real investigation. And speaking about real investigation, they're not even doing a real investigation about this shooting of this kid shooting people around. I mean, if they would have done, okay, what could have caused someone to have done something like this? What type? Because remember, this is Columbine. It's Columbine all over again,
right.
And we're still not trying to investigate or find the answers. And I'm relating that, you know, this is a media problem, and the media is not doing their jobs when investigating something as important as our health and our relationship with food. and at the same time, you know, mental illness. And food does, the way we eat, certain eating habits does have a certain effect on how we think.
Right.
So,
absolutely. And,
you know,
and even beyond that, how we eat, how our affects our bodies and our self-image, and a lot of unhappiness and depression is ultimately food and diet related. Not just the chemicals in the food, but what that food is doing to your body and your sense and your image of yourself.
Exactly. And no one's reporting about this, and no one's talking about this. I thank you so much, and you have, and this is a great show, and thanks for bringing up these issues.
Thanks, Moses. I appreciate that.
Have a great one.
All right, let's go to my buddy Bill in Phoenix. Bill, welcome to the program.
Yeah, talk about making how you eat making you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I went to my garden tonight, and I picked mustard greens, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I put them in this pan with some onions and some mushrooms and other good things and sautéed them, right? And it was great, right? And I felt great, Jeff, you know, after I ate it, you know.
Sure. Yeah, that's something I've been in Arizona about 9 years, came from southern Indiana where if you accidentally dropped a seed on the ground, something grew in about a week. I don't grow any of my own food anymore, and I really miss the fresh produce. And that's, I guess I'm going to start, there's a farmer's market local. Again, I'm not going to make this too much about Arizona because obviously we're in a lot more markets tonight, but find your local farmer's market and start eating.
Green leafy vegetables, kids. You can grow them so handily.
Yeah.
And they're so good for you.
Thanks, Bill.
You know, I love you, right?
Love you like a brother. Take care.
Hey.
We'll be right back after these messages. It's the Molloy Show. I'm Jeff Farias filling in on the November Radio Network. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Molloy Show. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike Molloy this very evening on the Nova M Radio Network. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. My website is jefffarias.com. You can send me an email at jeff@jefffarias.com. Would love to hear from you. Let's go to keep the phone lines moving. Let's go to Alex in Scottsdale. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Is this Jeff?
Yes, it is.
Hey, it's Alex.
How you doing, buddy?
This gun thing, they're going to turn this into another IMUS thing, I think.
They turn everything into an IMUS thing.
I mean, Fox, they said, oh, yeah, this Friday we've got a special report coming Friday on the massacre in Virginia. And it's like, well, why do you wait until Friday? Because they got to back up the information, make sure they don't say anything stupid and get sued for it.
Well, they got to get it cleared by the NRA before they actually present it.
You know, insanity comes in all cases, shapes, and forms, and gun control never did anything for anybody. Ask anybody that's from Poland that knows anything what happened when Hitler moved in.
Yeah, I don't think this is a gun issue. I really don't. And I've seen both sides kind of jumping to it. You know, we need more gun control, and the right saying we need left gun control. The genie's out of the bottle. You're not going to be able to confiscate all the guns. It's just not going to happen. And as I spoke to a Canadian earlier, they have a lot of guns in Canada. They have a lot of guns in a lot of places, but they don't have the same cultural issues, and they don't have this propensity to butcher one another like we do in this country.
I lived in Canada for about a year, and I was actually going to become a Canadian citizen when I lost a bunch of money back in 1987 because the first Bush administration.
Right.
You know, when they were selling everything to the RRTC and they were stealing everybody's property and they had the Arabs were coming over and buying everything for 10 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm. Right. They sold Rockefeller Center to the Arabs. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. In half of Arizona. You talk, you know, out there all Keating's properties, they turned around and sold to developers and made billions of dollars.
Yeah.
All at the cost of the taxpayer. You know, and what Keating did 2 years later, they made it illegal again.
Right.
You know, it's just total hypocrisy. It's like one side of the rich steals from the other side while the middle class American pays for it.
The dwindling middle class, yeah.
The dwindling middle class. And how do you classify middle class anymore?
Right.
I mean, where can you find a financial point? I mean, gas at $2.95. I mean, you know, and Napolitano says she's going to check into it.
Right.
It's like, come on, you know what? I mean, what's a barrel of oil today at? Was it $60 a barrel?
I'm not sure where it was. I know it's not as high as it has been, but gas is certainly more expensive. It's like it's. I paid $3 a gallon yesterday.
The reason I did call, though, is a friend of mine caught this thing on one of the, you know, documentary channels on satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this guy named David Suzuki. He's been around since the 80s. Have you heard of him? Suzuki Speaks.
Mm-hmm. I don't know him.
In this documentary, he starts talking about oxygen and water and food and what it takes. And, like, if we want to take a trip back in time and see the planet when it was being created, you know. And he goes, it takes an hour for a species to live and die with enough oxygen and food inside this test tube. Now, we've got the most humans on the planet we've ever had. And he says there's a total of 61 minutes, including death, in the test tube, where they show how mankind and how species and all this stuff has evolved. He's a scientist, right?
Right.
And he's talking about, well, you know, if we don't have enough water and we don't have enough air to breathe because our CO is being depleted, look at the chemical process that it took to make all this stuff happen. Okay, and what his point was we're basically living in the 58th to the 59th minute.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody sees this, they'll actually show that how fragile this thing really is and how people that want to believe what they want to believe can go ahead and believe what they want to believe. But when he was talking, he says, if they had to produce air, and because the trees die and they're raping the forest and all this stuff's going on, he says, but you have to look at it because you can only produce so much oxygen. And you've got, like, what is it, 7 billion people on the planet now? Something like that.
Well, I think so. That's good. Close enough.
You know, roughly. Anyway, so his point was, he goes, even if you wanted to produce water and air, it would cost $33 trillion for the 7 billion people.
Wow.
Now, the world economy is only $16 trillion. So, and people don't think about these things, but all the way through his documentary, David points these things out, and he says, so you're all sitting there complaining. One thing, he goes, I'm not taking Christ's side, I'm not taking Jewish side. He goes, if everybody just takes this and stands aside, takes bipartisan politics, and looks at the fact of what's going on and how this is debilitating, you know, Mars probably had a really nice planet at one time, and guess what? It evolved, and now it all is CO2.
Right.
You know, methane gas is going up and down from the sun at the, you know, during the day and during the night. And I just thought I would bring it up because it's like, you know, nobody wants to talk about global warming. I have been doing, Jeff, there was something else I was going to bring up. Do you want me to hold?
I got it. It's going to be a long hold, buddy. It's like a 9-minute break, so I'm just going to have to let you slide on. I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay?
All right. I'll go ahead and call on that other topic about the bees.
Oh, yeah. We can talk about that tomorrow. I saw that article in the Republic today. Amazing.
Okay.
Thanks, Alex.
You're welcome.
Take care, buddy. It's the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Jeff Ferry sitting in for Mike on the Novam Radio Network. I'll be right back with your calls. It's the Mike Malloy Show on a Tuesday night in April. I'm Jeff Farias sitting in for Mike. It's a travel day for him on the Nova M Radio Network. Got a full board of callers, and I'm going to get right to you after I point out this little gem I found. This comes from First Draft on .com on the internet. 2 years since Katrina, and the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA still has not developed a new national response plan. FEMA agency, which bore the brunt of the criticism following the Hurricane Katrina and Rita devastations on the Gulf Coast, sent an advisory to Congress last week acknowledging it will not meet its June 1st deadline for issuing a new national response plan. 2 years out, and they still haven't figured out what to do for the next hurricane season. God help us all. Let's go to take the callers in the order I get them. Up next is John in Santa Clara, California. John, welcome to the program. You there, John? Hello? I can hear myself a little bit in the background. John, I'm going to put you back on hold. We'll try and get back to you, buddy. I know there's a little bit of a time delay here, especially if you're listening on the stream. Let's go to Bruce in California. Bruce, you there?
Yeah, I sure am.
Hey, what's on your mind tonight?
Oh, hey, I was listening to your comments about impeachment, Dennis Kucinich.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm kind of reluctant to thinking about this. Imagine for a second that they were successful and removed Cheney.
Right.
And a Mitt Romney was put in there,
mm-hmm.
and now he's running as an incumbent vice
yep.
president.
Mm-hmm.
So, for what it's worth, that's my comment. That's my thought. I don't know that it's such a great idea, frankly.
Well, I think what you have to look at is what are the odds of an impeachment succeeding through the Senate? Because the House brings up the articles of the impeachment, present them to the Senate, and the Senate has to try it. And I believe it's not a 51-49 split. I believe you need a supermajority to impeach.
Yeah.
So essentially what Kucinich would do would officially impeach Dick Cheney. He would survive the Senate but be forever smeared
right.
with
the way Clinton was. Yeah.
Impeachment. Right.
I got you.
So
that's maybe a little better idea.
Yeah. Possibly. I don't know. I mean, I'm maybe overanalyzing a little bit, but, you know, I mean, that was initially what I thought. What I'm afraid of is that the politics gets in the way of doing the right thing here. I really think that it's important not only to get these people out of office, but to disgrace them and to keep their ilk from ever getting back into our government.
It's not above the Republicans to see the opportunity in it, though.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
And to actually have their minions vote against Cheney and remove him.
Right. He would probably resign before it got to that point. I would imagine he would probably
it wouldn't
duck
matter.
Out of there. Yeah.
It wouldn't matter. We'd still have an incumbent
right, exactly.
vice
right.
president running against
right.
you know.
Yeah. Excellent point. But again, I think anything connected to the Bush administration as an incumbent, I don't know. Mitt Romney, I guess that might be a little bit scary, but I don't know. I think anything, I think it's going to be hard for somebody named Bush to get elected dog catcher from here on out. To tell you
yeah,
what
I hear you.
Yeah,
anyone
connected to their cabal, I don't know. Anyway, thanks for that thought.
Yeah, well, I just thought I'd mention it, you know.
No,
right,
it's definitely worth thinking about. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Let's go to Sarge in Mississippi. Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
How you doing today, buddy?
You know, all of this this impeachment sounds good, but, you know, there's something else that needs to be mentioned, too, is this little backdoor thing where they're trying, on the judge's ruling on the internet radio royalties
mm-hmm.
today. I think that's something that's really significant. We need to really get out to the people. Do you realize what that's going to do to the?
Oh, it'll cripple internet radio. Yeah, absolutely.
And this is just going to really shut down some of our main efforts. You know, unless someone happens to have a show on Novim or one of the others, Air America, that's going to really hurt.
Yep.
And I'm really worried about that, and I hope everybody will pay attention. I wrote about it at Unreported News, but it's something that really scares me. And you're talking about Katrina. Did you hear about the college students that at Dillard who are now being means tested, and they are owing like a couple of $1,000s?
What back up? How are they being? What's happening? Where's Dillard College in?
In New Orleans.
In New Orleans.
Uh huh. And they were encouraged by the college. I believe Dillard is a junior college or
mm-hmm.
community college, and they were encouraged to get the funds, and FEMA encouraged them, and the school, and you know, just everybody did. So they went ahead and got them, and they kept getting these checks. And now they have done a means test on them, and they have come back and said they have to pay this money back.
Wow.
It's just a really a stupid story, and it's I'll try and get it up as unreported news, but it just shows you how incompetent this whole ordeal is being handled. I'll try and keep everybody abreast of it, but it, you know that they're freezing the funds, and I have busted my butt trying to talk to FEMA, and you can't get a straight answer from them. They won't tell you anything. It's like the guy Jesus that we talked to. And he refused to even tell us why the funds were cut off to Mississippi and Louisiana, and I still can't find out if they've been restored or not.
I would guess they haven't, based on FEMA's track record so far.
It's just a mess, man. I don't know. If they don't stop it, it's going to kill so many people. Americans really need to speak out. This administration and even this complicit Congress, even though I know there's a lot going on to try and straighten out some of this mess, we don't have the luxury of playing games with these people.
Right.
And especially coming this close to hurricane season, I'm glad I'll be out of here by the next hurricane season.
Yeah, yeah.
But the ones that's going to be left here, I feel for them. I really do.
Yeah, it's going to be an ugly season. I'm sorry to have to admit that to myself, but
I just can't say it enough, but I want to thank everybody who has done so much in my in the efforts that we've done to help the people in the Katrina area, because believe me, it is helpful. But we need so much more.
Right. Well, it's just sad that it falls on regular citizens to try and motivate and to make something happen, that our government's turned its back on so many of our brothers and sisters down there.
I was on with Hancock. I can't think of his first name.
Ernie
Hancock.
Uh-huh.
On Sunday, while y'all were at the party having fun, I was arguing with him. But he's a nice guy, and I like what he says, and he presents a good argument. But his idea is that, well, why do you expect anything from the government? Well, sometimes you have to expect something from the government.
Well, there are certain things that only something that only a big bureaucracy like the government can do. There's some just individuals just do not have the resources to pull together. You need something the size of our government to step up and take care of. Even our federal government, there are things that the states can't even handle the scope of. And that's why we have things like FEMA.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jeff, thank you so much, pal, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, buddy. Good talking to you as always. Bye-bye. Let's go to Joe in Indianapolis. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Jeff. I just wondered if you know anything about what the latest our Secretary of State, Todd Rokita, said at a dinner last night.
No, I didn't hear that.
Well, if you Google it, it's Todd Rokita, Rokita.
Mm-hmm.
He said at a meeting, which Indiana's become a purple state.
Right.
We're not, you know what I mean?
You know
how that's working out for us. And it'll be blue pretty soon. But anyway, he said, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but I'm thinking we'll get pretty close. He was talking with, it was an all-white dinner that attended, and he said that 90% of all blacks in Indiana vote Democrat and 10 vote Republican. He goes, how can that be possible? And he looked at the crowd and said, well, we know who the slave and who the master in that relationship is, don't we?
Wow.
I could not believe it. And I saw it in every, I mean, if some of our lawmakers here are just, they're going nuts. But if you, Todd Rokita, if you Google his name, I think you do WTHR, I think, .com. It was on Channel 13. And it was just like, everybody's looking at each other like, how could you say that? What would make you say something like that? And he says, well, if I hurt anybody's feelings, I'm sorry. And one of the representatives here, Bill Crawford, said, what do you mean if you hurt someone's feelings? What are you saying if you
right,
did?
Right, yeah, yeah. It's that non-apology that we seem to hear so often from the administration. If anyone was offended, I am sorry. I did not, yeah. But what do you mean if? Exactly. God, my God.
But it was unbelievable, and again, we were pretty close to getting all the state. He was one of the Secretary of State stayed in the hands of Republicans this time, but we did everything else. In Marion County here in Indianapolis, we swept, big time. I mean, all right. It's always won the Democrat, and we're going to do it again this year.
Well, I used to live down there in Brown County outside of Bloomington, and that was one of the little blue oases of a blue oasis in Indiana. Loved it down there.
You're in Nashville or right in Brown County?
Outside of Nashville, Helmsburg, actually, is where I live.
Well, there you go.
Right near Bean Blossom. Yep. Hey, thanks a lot, Joe. Good talking to you, buddy. The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Jeff Farish filling in, taking your phone calls. It's all caller driven from here on out, folks. 1-800-989-1480. I'll be right back.
Upset with the setup, get up, make a change. Upset with the setup, get up and make a change. Upset with the setup, get up and make a change. Upset, fed up, change it.
Hey, we're back. You've tuned into the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike tonight. Tomorrow, the House Judiciary Committee will meet in order to vote on whether to offer former Justice Department official Monica Goodling of Pat Robertson's Regent University immunity from prosecution. Basically, dismantles the whole her taking the fifth issue, because she cannot incriminate herself if she's been granted immunity. Should be very interesting to get her up and testifying, huh? Let's get back to the phone. Scott in Auburn, Alabama. Scott, welcome to the program. What's on your mind tonight?
Hi, Jeff. I'm really calling about last night. I wish I could grab Mike. I'm a conservative, and I doubt you'll give me as much time as you've given my predecessors, but I listened last night after the shootings in Virginia Tech, and I don't know if I've ever been as disgusted as I was. The bodies weren't even cold yet, and we decided that it was George Bush's fault. They talked about how the fascist Bush had done this in the culture of death, and I don't know if you guys realize that to most people listening to this radio station, especially when Malloy's at the helm, it's like listening to a KKK meeting if you don't happen to have the hood on. Instead of taking people with whom you disagree and having intelligent conversation, all that goes on is we damn people because we want to personalize it. Who gives a rip whether this woman went to Regent University or not?
She's not qualified. I care because she's not qualified for the position
When your guy gets elected president, he gets to appoint the people he wants to appoint.
But most guys who get elected president are smart enough to put qualified people in these positions. That's why we see what we see at Katrina.
That's why we're seeing
what we're happening in our food supply. It goes on and on throughout our government.
Yeah, that's why we had Jocelyn Elders, my friend. The losing side has
who died because of Jocelyn Elders?
Who died because of this woman at the Justice Department? You take people that you disagree with and you demonize them because you don't have enough facts.
You just demonized Jocelyn Elders.
No, I think
but you're accusing our side of demonizing.
I said she wasn't any more qualified.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about qualifications.
Right, I'm talking about qualifications. Regent University isn't a real university.
Just like last night, Malloy used the word fascist. I don't know if he can define it. But if you think we had a very simple election in November,
mm-hmm.
the Democrats won, and you know what? It worked just like it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And they all took office.
Right.
But you know what I heard on Malloy's show about a month before the election? These morons who called up and said they thought that Bush would federalize and declared the state of emergency. And you know what? He didn't challenge him on that. He allows these simple-minded people to believe that the country's already gone to hell. the country's working fine. And if people get as disgusted with Bush as they should, as they probably are going to.
The country ain't working fine for most Americans, and that's why most Americans don't approve of the job this president or his administration is doing.
And you know what will happen? You know what's wonderful?
What's that?
It's already happened. You're right about the most Americans don't approve, and that's why the Democrats took Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't put up a decent presidential candidate, the Democrats will take the presidency. That's the way it should be.
Right.
That's the way it works.
So why is that? Why are you presenting that as a point of contention?
No, the point of contention is that these idiots on left-wing talk radio are they're the black helicopter crowd of the left. They believe in every conspiracy.
So we're name callers. And conspiracy theorists, that's your point, right? We're name callers and conspiracy theorists. And all the saints are on the right side of the aisle. The Ann Coulters, the Rush Limbaughs, the Michael Savages. Those are the good people out there, right?
What I'm telling you is, no, we're not talking about them. That's a straw man.
Uh-huh.
If you're gonna argue properly. That's a straw man.
How is that a straw man? Explain that to me. You accuse our side, the liberals, our side.
Did I use the word the liberals? I didn't do that.
What did you use? What word did you use?
I think you and I have degraded to your side and my side.
Right.
The point is, because you disagree with people politically, I disagreed with Bill Clinton politically.
So did I.
I think there's reasonable evidence that he's a serial batterer. Good evidence.
it's the left side of the aisle.
But listen to me, brings out
the straw man. He's the biggest straw man in the world to people on your side of the aisle. I've let you on here for almost 4.5 minutes, and I knew it was a matter of time before Bill Clinton was the reason for all of this. My God. You know, again, I'm going to get emails. I gave that guy too much time. He started off by saying he wouldn't get time. He got more time than anyone's gotten tonight. 4.5 minutes I gave that gentleman to make his point. Joseph in Wells, Vermont, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing good. How about
you,
buddy?
Hey, Jeff, I'm calling from the state where I had 36 towns vote for impeachment here in Vermont. Now, going back to that issue for a minute, the fellow that called a little while ago that said impeachment, talked about impeachment. Well, first of all, we have to understand that impeachment is simply filing charges against people for malfeasance, high crimes, and misdemeanors, not necessarily for removal from office.
Right.
Now, we know, for example, that there's not enough time left to actually remove these people from office, but the Constitution demands it. The Constitution demands that the people who committed these crimes have to be held accountable for them.
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to. If we believe in that, we have to do that.
I agree on that. The politics of you know, who's going to replace him and does that give them an advantage?
It's all irrelevant. Also irrelevant because the fellow that called before you was talking about fascism. Well, Mussolini defined fascism real well.
Mm-hmm.
He said fascism is the best form of government, where the governments take over the corporations. In this country, the corporations have took over the government. What's the difference?
Right.
There's no difference between those two. And that's what George Bush and Dick Cheney are. They're the ultimate of the corporate control of the government. You know, it's interesting that they bash big government, but they are it.
Yep. I think, trying to think who even said it, but when fascism comes to America, I think Sinclair Lewis, when fascism comes to America, it'll be wrapped in a flag and a cross.
And the next thing you need to do is take these guys up on crimes and high crimes and on war crimes.
I'm all behind you, buddy. Thanks for your call tonight. The Mike Malloy Show, I'm Jeff Farias. We'll be right back after these messages. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around this thing. This idiot calls me from Auburn, Alabama, to say everything's going great in the country, and I look around and I don't see it. I see 3,300 of our brothers and sisters dead in Iraq. I see people in the Gulf Coast and New Orleans and in Mississippi whose homes are a pile of splinters on the ground, living in trailers that get broken into every night. Our food supply is tainted. Our water is undrinkable. Our air is unbreathable here in Phoenix. I see our planet getting warmer. I see corruption throughout every level of our government. I see cronies, people with no qualifications to be serving our government, screwing up every time something goes wrong. Our government is a composite of brownies, basically. That's who these people are, doing a heck of a job. And this idiot says everything's going great in America. And when you finally get down to it, it's all Clinton's fault. Luckily, these people only represent about 28%. Another election or two, and we won't have to hear from them much anymore. I hope for my conservative friends they can rebuild their party. And there could be actually a serious debate once again in America about the way forward. Because right now the GOP is dead, essentially. They got nothing left. As you hear in that Doran promo, they have no new ideas, and all their old ideas have been proven wrong. Let's get back on the phones. Henry in Birmingham, Alabama. Henry, welcome to the program.
Yes, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I hear you. I was sitting there listening to the guy from Auburn myself, and I was sitting there thinking, what America he living in?
Yeah.
I couldn't understand it myself. But the main thing I wanted to say was about this administration. Now, they have people who took and falls for things that they have done wrong. And because the head people are never going to say they're responsible for anything.
Right.
And they haven't said anything that they're responsible for. They haven't apologized for anything. They know they underfunded VA. They underfunded the Pentagon. But yet all these billions of dollars are keep going overseas and all these other places. But what about the people here?
Right. And that's why loyalty is so important to them. Because they need fall guys. So it never makes its way back to the people really responsible for these things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And truthfully, you know, just like this guy Libby. Okay, he's supposed to be getting maybe a possible new trial, maybe get sentenced or whatever the case may be. He's not going to do a day. They're going to, you know, at the last moment, they're going to give him that presidential pardon.
Yeah.
And he'll go on by his way because what he did, he sacrificed himself for Dick Cheney. Because the thing I would never understand, everything has gone wrong in this administration they got caught in so far. Two names keep showing up. If it ain't Dick Cheney,
yeah.
It's Karl Rove.
Yep.
And my thing is, why in the world nobody doing under Karl Rove?
Well, they're talking about a possible obstruction of justice charges against him for deleting all those emails.
Yeah, but the thing is, if anybody who know anything about, you know, computers and anything, mm-hmm. You can delete all you want, but
yeah,
back
it's still
in servers
there.
Is back there somewhere unless you got rid of the server itself.
Right. And if he did, that's obviously obstruction of justice. So it's
exactly.
Kind of it's a rock and a hard place for him, because if he can't produce the emails, that's obstruction of justice. If he can produce them, there's all this incriminating information in them.
And you know, and the thing that gets me about the caller from Auburn, mm-hmm. The statement they made calling out us fascists.
Right.
Well, the thing I want him to know about this, at least you can call it liberal, left side, Democrat, whatever. At least the radio host gives the opposite side an opportunity to give an opinion on the radio.
Right.
They don't screen the calls and tell everybody, well, we're not going to talk about that. No, we don't need to hear what you have to say. Because if I had an opportunity to talk to Mushmiller Head over there, you know, the guy who keeps getting the drugs from the doctors, but
mm-hmm.
Yet he want all drug dealers to be shot.
Right, yep.
You know, I like to put him in his place.
Yep, the unmarried man who brought a bunch of Viagra to the Dominican Republic for a vacation.
There you go.
Yeah, that guy.
And it's just, all I'm saying is, as a country as a whole, We know we need to put better, more responsible politicians in office. And yes, you're right. People who are qualified to understand a job and who can relate it to the public and get things done with the least amount of eruptions of people's lives in the process.
Right. And for whatever you want to say about Clinton, Clinton did surround himself with bright people, regardless of whether they agreed with him or not. Perfect example, his Secretary of Defense was William Cohn, a Republican from Maine.
Yeah, exactly. And then look at the guy that has the talk show now on CBS.
George Stephanopoulos.
Secretary. I mean, it didn't matter if they were Democrat or Republican or even independent. Mm-hmm. He picked the best person that he knew from those individual fields to run these programs. That way, if you got people who qualify who run it, therefore, you have less problems than him to deal with.
Right.
But when you got a bunch of dummies up, I'm not saying they all are dummies or anything like that, but the bottom line is like this. Whenever you have a problem and you go to the main source and the only thing that guy can say, well, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wasn't told that. Well, what were you told? And then you come to find out all of it was a lie in the first place.
Right.
I mean, at what point do we stop?
Hopefully, hopefully more people are waking up to this thing, and hopefully we can really turn this thing around in 08, get a bigger majority in the Senate, a bigger majority in the House, and whoever gets this job next, who's ever sitting next in the White House, is inheriting an unholy mess, and they may not be able to clean it up in 8 years. This may take a generation to reverse the mess that these people created.
Senator Harry Reid said,
mm-hmm.
and I think he said the best, and he said it on another show, I think it was Ed Schultz's show. He said, whoever the next president may be, they have very little room for error.
Yeah.
Because this administration has messed things so much, they can't afford to mess up.
Yeah.
All right, well,
thanks for your
you
call,
guys
Henry.
Have a good time tonight.
Thank you. Good talking to you,
all
tonight,
right,
bro.
You too.
Thank you. Let's go to Tim in San Francisco. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing there, man?
I'm good. How you doing tonight?
All right, Jim. Hey, I was just thinking about that guy that called from Arkansas, the first guy.
Auburn, Alabama, actually.
Alabama, there we go. And, he exemplifies the truly dangerous racist neocons operative that are working in our country right now. I mean, these guys are sharp, right, in their racism. And they have absolutely no compunction whatsoever to, lying any way they want to and do anything they need to get things done their way. I mean, the whole tradition of quote-unquote conservatism, which I think is definitely a misnomer because, I think us liberals are the conservatives and these other ones are the freaks,
They're not conservative, but they're radicals. There's nothing conservative about the neocons
or the
Bush agenda.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing conservative about it. Yeah. I mean, they are absolutely hardcore, nothing but get anything they want to, any way they want to.
Right. Machiavellians.
I guess, anyway, yes, definitely. Definitely a Machiavellian ideal. But I also saw that, with the election of George Bush, it exemplified the true nature of these people because, you see, this was the best they could come up with in this country, okay? This is the absolute best guy they could ever come up with, right?
Yeah.
And what this does is it absolutely mirrors just what kind of failures these people are. They have to put a total failure like this in order to be successful.
Right.
I mean, my God, you consider this success when you've torn apart a world? I mean, there's nothing there. And if they're like Satan worshipers, like they say about some of these cults and stuff, it's like, well, what's Satan got, man? I mean, there's nothing to it. It's all garbage and horse hooey.
Yeah. Well, there's a gentleman who calls in this program from time to time posing as Lucifer, and he disclaims any involvement with the administration. He said they kind of creep him out, so he doesn't want any part of them. So.
Well, that's his own fault. He helped the folks put him up.
Yeah.
So it's his own darn fault. And I guess for me, the worst thing you could ever say to Satan is, hey, go with God, baby.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, Tim, thanks for your call tonight, buddy.
You bet you, bro. Have a good one.
Good talking to you. Hey, let's take a break. We're going to come back. I'm Jeff Farias, filling in for the Mike Malloy. Mike Malloy on the Mike Malloy program, Novem Radio Network, 1-800-989-1480. We'll get to your calls right on the other side. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike. It's a travel day for him. He's getting back to Atlanta from his visit here in Phoenix. We're happy to fill the chair. First up, Robert in Daly City, California. Robert, welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing tonight? What's on your mind?
I'm doing good, Jeff. How was your party on Sunday
Phoenix? It was amazing. I still haven't recovered yet. And I had one drink that I nursed all night, so it wasn't from drinking. It wasn't that kind of hangover. I just haven't been able to sleep since. I've been so excited. And
wow.
It was so much fun. It was just amazing. Between 1,200 people packed in a room just having a great time being together. So it was a lot of fun.
I wish you could come up to San Francisco and do that. You had a lot of the heavy hitters there. It sounded like fun.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was great. Yeah, seeing all of them together on one stage, it was pretty amazing.
You know, the Canadians and the Cubans had an interesting solution to these corporate oil guys back in the 50s. The Canadians and Cubans nationalized the oil. Now, the Canadians made a deal to, settle the debt, but the Cubans went ahead and decided, you know what? You've messed with us so much, we're just going to take it. And I think what really ticked the ruling elites in America off is the palatial homes, the winter homes they had on the coast of Cuba, just took everything.
Right.
Which I think is their right. But the thing in this society is that the corporate control, they've just infiltrated government so much. And I think what needs to happen is we need to just let them know this isn't a wag the dog type thing. This republic actually can control corporations and decide how long they get to live, if they get to exist, what they get to do for reasons of national security or global security, whether a corporation gets to be owned by the people or not.
Right. And how did we get to the point where the stockholder became the most important person in the universe, and that everything that happens in America is to take care of the stockholder? You know, it's just.
Well, and the balance and the pluses and minuses in the corporate ledger is, or this particular society, is that all the pluses, everything is added up as a plus. If you supply the nicotine to somebody and they get to cancer, well, then there's an industry that charges $325,000 for every, on average, for every cancer patient.
Right.
That's all a plus. You build nuclear weapons, that's a plus. There's like no negatives in it. If you want to launder money on Wall Street and you've got you're listed on NASDAQ, you don't have to report imported cash to the SEC. You can bring a super tanker full of cash and not have to tell anyone.
Right.
All these loopholes for corporations, it's like you look in the 2000, the Taliban cut off the drug supply, and we took a tank in the stock market. The dot-com bubble burst. Okay, we go into Afghanistan. We go into Iraq. There's more heroin growing in Afghanistan than ever before. So when people like Mike Rupert say that it's been put to Congress, and they've actually been presented this evidence that there is $800 billion a year laundered on Wall Street, and then we're building prisons and putting people in jail for dealing drugs.
Right.
It's this whole thing. It's this really Luciferian model that really doesn't serve the highest aspirations of society, I don't believe.
You make an excellent point. Again, that word fascism gets thrown around a lot, and everybody just pictures jackboots and Sieg Heil. But fascism is about corporatism and corporate control of the government.
This is what Mussolini said about it. Corporatism is that.
Fascism,
but fascism really is about these. If you look at the symbols in the Congress in different places around the world, it's these little sticks that are all bound together.
Right.
Out of many little ones, you make one. Now, fascism can be on one side of the spectrum or on the other. It's just the massive conglomeration of power to be like the axe on top of the fasci.
Right.
It's to wield power. It's to bring people together in a unified place to wield it and use power, organizing principle. But the thing is, we are at a time in history where we're so global. We understand what the nature of the earth is. We need to be thinking more in terms of meeting potential dangers on our earth that could cause massive catastrophes. Like an organization like the CIA needs to have a different modus operandi. They need to be told wherever there's a potential problem in the world, we need to find a solution that doesn't involve homicide or what happened in the Second World War with the concentration camps, because we know that we backed Hitler. We backed Hitler. We were involved in overthrowing democracies around the world, from Iran
I think the CIA calls it blowback, and we're certainly in a blowback period right now. Hey, Robert, I got to take a break. I got a hard break coming off the bottom of the hour. Thanks for your call. Thanks for your insights today.
Bye
I appreciate it. We'll be right back on the Mike Malloy Show. Lots more of your calls.
Every time I've cried, oh, my heart, in the palm of your hand, don't listen to it break it.
Hearing a young voice screaming out your words, maybe someday those words will be heard.
We're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, filling in for Mike tonight. That kind of sums it up, doesn't it? A better hope we have a better understanding someday in the future. I don't have a lot of, some days are better than others. I don't have a lot of hope for our current situation. We need some serious, serious changes in this country. In so many levels of our society. And yeah, the one point our friend from Auburn made is that, you know, it's not all Bush's fault. But our culture is sick, folks. And I'm not sure how we get there. But that's why we have programs like this one, where we come together on the airwaves and we talk. Let's go to Philip in St. Louis. Philip, welcome to the program. Philip, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're on the air, buddy. What's up?
Yeah, I got two questions. The first is, if Monica Goodling is issued immunity, does that immunize her from perjuring herself or just from incriminating herself?
I think just from incriminating yourself. I don't think you can still be charged with perjury. Yeah.
All right. And the second is, being that the RNC is pretty much corrupt on an institutional level, mm-hmm. can they be held culpable for issuing these email addresses and allowing them to delete the information?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. The reasons for issuing the computers and the emails was a particularly legitimate one. And actually, I completely agree with them having their own systems so that they're not doing politics on the taxpayers' money. There's
right.
no problem with that. The problem is that Rove was taking advantage of this, apparently, and using this as a hidden email system for political reasons. Doing politics, and not just doing politics, but doing the government business on these in order to do them in secret.
Right, I understand that.
Right,
I was
right.
Just,
but it's not illegal to have computers
there. It's hard for me to believe that members of the RNC didn't know that this was going on.
Right. No, I'm sure they did, because obviously that was, you know, Rove was kind of very much controlling what was going on with the RNC and the political aspects of it and the campaigns. The illegal part is deleting the stuff and getting rid of it. Apparently, assuming it, if they actually scrub the servers, that's extremely illegal, and they know it is.
The RNC would be the ones that would have to scrub the service.
Right.
And I guess that was my question, is could they be held
accountable for? Oh, absolutely, yeah. Whoever it turns out to be the one who have scrubbed the server, and it's not just a simple question of deleting. The only way you can never delete anything from that server. You can only write over it so many times that it's no longer readable.
Right.
Which there's no way to accidentally lose this information.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Philip. Let's go next to John in Santa Clara, California. John, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Jeff. You're doing great as a sub.
Thank you.
Spectacular, brilliant callers. I like the way you're taking calls from some red staters to mix it up. that's what I would be doing. Who wants to talk to the choir all the time? You're doing a great job.
Thank you. Well, I have no idea what people want to talk about when they come on. I'm just looking at a name and a city right now. Mm-hmm. So I like to try and keep it. I like to try and keep it loose that way. It keeps me on my toes, and I don't care if it goes off topic. I like to keep all topics on the table. And if I don't know what I'm talking about, I'll say I don't know. So
yes, sir. Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call. And I went to college many years ago in Arizona, and I'm glad to see in the early 1970s, actually, in Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love
and,
that.
Yeah, and I'm really glad to see that Phoenix is, I almost got slaughtered, actually. And you can look this up on page 167 of the final days of Richard Nixon, that bestseller in 76. One of his last public appearances, I'm very proud to say, knee in about maybe 400 gaggle of college students literally shouted him down. He couldn't speak. He was on Valium and booze. And
wow.
Yeah, it was. It's on 167 of Final Days, which is one of the biggest bestsellers of the 70s. The follow up to All the President's Men, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And not to give you guys a history lesson here, but thus oldies, you know, I'll be 52 now. I'm a little older than I was in those days, but it really is like deja vu all over again. And when it shows you how my mind works. Like when they said murder on campus, the very first thing I thought about was Kent State. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's weighed in on that, but I know they're totally different. But, you know, I mean, our generation had to go through Nixon the next day said that you want to really hear a fascist statement. He actually said that there were a bunch of bums anyway. You know, so what? You
know? Wow. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are, you know, I just want to weigh in and give a little perspective to. Mm-hmm. They're not related, but just, you know, some of what is going on in the world. And could it happen again with Bush or something? Absolutely.
Obviously they've been taking a lot of steps that if they ever did want to bring in martial law, they have the means to do it at this mm-hmm. point. They have, Halliburton building these camps, internment camps, basically quarantine camps, they're calling them, around the country. The Military Commissions Act, where we lose habeas corpus, where we lose posse comitatus, all these different type of things changing. They're not doing this because they don't intend to use it.
Yeah, I mean, the way this man came to us, if you want to call him a man, the Supremes and his daddy's friends,
mm-hmm.
and the way he ditched his one could argue he ditched his service to this country
right.
not once but twice,
mm-hmm.
Texas and Alabama,
yep.
And his dad laundered his records. Quite frankly, I think nothing of this guy. The guy from Alabama, I don't know. I would welcome, if I was a talk show host, and I may actually try out for one, help you here in Cakewick, by the way, make a demo.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a different topic. But anyway, I would welcome calls like, please defend this guy, please. You know, and if you can, go ahead. And
right. No, they can't. And that's why they always bring up Bill. It always comes down to Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually. They're still angry about Bill Clinton. Why? I don't know. I disagree with some of the things Clinton did, too.
Yeah.
Certainly not the same things they're mad about. Right. They can't get over this blue dress thing, you know. So.
Right. I guess, George Bush, on his drunken rages through Texas and Alabama in the 1970s, and he's the only, their words, president, in quotes, to have a criminal record for drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think in Texas and Alabama bars you just sit around and read the Bible or something?
Right.
Of course he was whoring around and drinking. Now let's say it like it is. This guy is a dry drunk,
yep.
And he comes to us with the only – that's a misdemeanor. That's not a misdemeanor in many states, by
yeah,
the way. That's
yeah.
a felony.
And it was there was a different attitude toward drunk driving back in the 70s than we have today. It was
I know about that, right?
A wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Just get home safe this time or whatever. Especially if you're well connected, as the Bushes were. Hey, thanks so much for your call tonight, John.
Yes,
good talking to you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Jenny in Miami, Florida. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff. Great program.
Thank you.
Very, very interesting. Jeff. I'm very, very upset with the Virginia Tech, needless to say.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to talk to you about, what does this jerk have to do next for us to get rid of him?
I think we're stuck with him until January 2009, to tell you the truth.
But you know why? I mean, this guy doesn't do one thing right. He can't even talk.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I was married, unfortunately, to an alcoholic, and they never recover. They stop drinking because if they drink, it's total chaos, and I wouldn't put it past this jerk that he drinks.
Mm-hmm.
But the damage in the brain, Jeff, is irreversible. And to think that we're in the hands of a sick of a sick fascist. On top of everything, he's a fascist. He's a dictator. He thinks he rules the world. He thinks he's above the Constitution. He's above the law. I mean, what do we have to wait for him to do to impeach him?
I think there is a significant segment of this population who believe the man can do no wrong. And I honestly can't. I've felt this way for, I don't know, 5 years, for quite a long time. I keep thinking every week, all right, well, this story, this is going to be the one that takes him down, and they keep on going.
He gets away with murder.
Yeah, literally, quite literally, yes.
And then this Cheney character, who's another devil, fascist, I mean, they have destroyed the world. Because don't forget, whatever the United States does
affects the world.
Affects the whole world.
Yep.
Like they say, when Wall Street has a cold, the Wall Street in London has pneumonia.
Right.
So but how long? I'm so upset. I've lived in this country for many, many years. I was educated in New York, and I've never seen the likes of this man.
No, these are certainly dark times. You know, I hope people are inspired to get involved in this process and work to get better people elected. If you're a Democrat, if you're a Green, if you're a Libertarian, even if you're a Republican, find better people.
But there's no such thing in the Republican Party, Jeff.
Well, there are some good ones out there every now and then. I don't always agree with them, but there are some people that are true to their word. Hey, Jenny, I got to take a break, though. I can tell by the music. Thanks so much for your thoughts tonight. I appreciate
it. It's great to hear you, and you have a beautiful voice.
Well, thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye now.
We'll be right back with more callers. The Malloy Show. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike tonight. Let's get right to the phones. Terry in Phoenix, you're on the air. Terry.
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, buddy?
I say, Jeff, you and I may support gun control, but in fact, the 2006 election was decided by people who voted against the Republican Party,
mm-hmm.
not for the Democratic Party. And in districts where if the Democrat had been for gun control, he wouldn't have won. People who opposed this war so much, they took a chance and said, I'll take a chance that the Democrats won't grab my gun because I hate this war so much and will vote a Democrat. And the Democrats in safe districts in New York and California have got to realize that the gun control has cost the Democratic Party very dearly. And it's simply a matter of a triage. And what I mean by that is, we could have had national health care if it wasn't for the gun control issue knocking out Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And national health care would save thousands of lives, perhaps hundreds of thousands of lives every year. And while it's unfortunate 30 or 50 people might die every 2 or 3 years in one of these, it's a price I think we have to pay. Because these people will simply, if you're wants to grab their gun, they're going to vote against you. They would vote for Hitler or Satan.
Again, I just think that's a construct of the media. I don't think Democrats are the gun grabbers. The gun grabbers I remember is the Bush administration grabbing guns from the people in New Orleans after Katrina.
Well, we have to convince the gun owners that we're not out to grab their gun. And like I say, because if we want to be the majority party and do good things and mm-hmm. save a lot of people's lives, like I said, the things like national health care,
right.
And we have to convince these people that while there are some Democrats who support gun control, the senator from Montana and Virginia, they certainly don't. And they wouldn't be there if they did.
I'm not a gun control Democrat either, to tell you the truth. I don't think we should have a national gun policy. I think it should be controlled by the states and even cities. We need a lot different gun policies for the people in New York City than you do for the people in western Pennsylvania or Montana or more rural areas.
You know where the Sullivan Law came from in New York?
No.
Right after the Civil War, because the white Democratic Party wanted to keep the guns away from black people.
Wow, interesting.
But like I said, I know that lady in New York who lost her husband on the Long Island.
Right.
But it's a trade-off we have to make. You have to mm-hmm. cut flesh to cut meat, and we're just going to have to live with this because
yep.
the cost of not living it cost Al Gore the election in West Virginia. It probably cost Kerry in Ohio. It's simply... We lose too much.
Right. No, I agree with you 100%, Terry.
All
right. I'm with you on that one. Hey,
okay.
Let's go to Richard in Sacramento, California. Richard, welcome to the program. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, I just want to talk to you about some dietary issues that I heard at the beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm over at a senior center here in Sacramento, California, and much of the seniors are, I know this may not mean much to your viewers. It may very well. But most of the seniors are very, very upset over the meals that they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
They're somewhat suspected of being very, very high in sodium. They're forced to pay for their meals. And if they don't pay for their meals at $185 a month, they're subject to eviction under the HUD rule.
Wow. Wow, that's remarkable. I didn't realize that sort of structure was in place.
It is in place, believe me, and it's unbelievable.
Wow,
and it's unconscionable. I'm just going over my situation with the Human Rights and Fair Housing Commission on this issue,
mm-hmm.
In hopes to get this. Eliminated senior. The reason why they have to order a meal a day by demand is because they have no cooking facilities in their units.
Wow.
So I can appreciate your concern about this, and I don't think it's right.
Right. If you could send me more information on that, I'd like to learn more about it. I can't make a lot of comments because I just really don't know, and I'm kind of running out of time. But Jeff
sure.
at jefffarias.com. I'd love to hear more about it. Thank you, Richard.
Jeff who?
Jeff at jefffarias.com. F-A-R-I-A-S is my last name.
Do you have a fax number?
No, not really. Well, I do, but I don't know what it is.
Could I get it off air?
Let me put you on hold, and we'll get it for you.
Yeah, okay.
Hang on. Let's go to Carl in Arkansas for the last word, I think. Carl, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I had a thing about that IMUS and stuff. Wasn't it Senator Trent Lott that said Strom Thurmond would have been a great president?
We wouldn't have all these problems if we had Strom Thurmond as president back
right.
in the 40s,
now,
right?
Where was the uproar on that? He does laws for us. IMUS and that Richard guy from Seinfeld, they don't make laws. Stuff. Here's a racist that does
bond.
Where's the uproar about that?
Well, he did. Well, depending on how you look at it, a lot of that happened. There was a little bit of a buzz about it. The real uproar came when the Bush people brought it up, and they got Trent Lott removed. Again, he became only one of 100 senators rather than Senate Majority Leader, but still an awfully powerful position. But many people think that it was actually the Bushes that brought him down, including Trent Lott himself. He thinks that the Bush people set him up with that thing.
Well, he's back in.
But he's not. Well, yeah, it's right. He's now Minority Whip, I guess. Yeah, he's now back
right.
in a leadership position. Yeah, yeah.
And I had another thing about that guy in Alabama. Is it
Auburn, Alabama? Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I'm gonna make it quick. Oh, I can hear the music
yeah,
already.
I drive a semi. I'm from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You do 180,000 service jobs in the hotel industry and stuff, and you lose a million factory jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and things are
going
great.
Good.
Yeah, I hear your call. Thanks for your call, buddy. Sorry I ran out of time on you. apologize to the other callers, John in Iowa, Barbara in Cave Creek. I ran out of time. I couldn't get to everybody. I want to thank Ian Huff. Everything you heard came through his fingers for answering the phones, engineering, producing, and spiritual advice. I want to thank everyone who works here at the station and the Nova M Network to keep this thing alive and on the air. I'll be back in my normal time slot, 6 to 9 on the East Coast on the Nova M Radio Network. Tune in if you liked what you heard tonight. Mike Malloy will be back tomorrow. Thank you all.